Welcome back to the Fitzgerald Theater in downtown St. Paul. I'm Gary Eichen. This is another Fitzgerald Forum coming to you live here on Minnesota Public Radio. Governor Jesse Ventura released his first state budget last week. This evening we're discussing the governor's priorities and how they compare with the priorities of Minnesota's top legislative leaders. Governor is here on the Fitzgerald Theater stage. House Republican Leader Steve Swigum is here. Senate DFL Majority Leader Roger Moe is here as well. Now, if you just tuned in, we've been taking questions from the audience here at the Fitzgerald. Our four reporters, the Oprahs, are standing by to field questions. So those of you here, raise your hand and we'll try to get to as many questions as we can. If you're joining us online, if you've got a question or comment, send us an email and we'll try to add those to the mix as well. Our online address is mpr.org. Let's get right back to the questions, and up we go to the second, up to the balcony where Melanie Summer is standing by. Melanie?
Gary, I'm afraid my questioner has not returned yet from the reset. So how about if we...
John Raby, do you have a questioner there?
Sure, I do. We have Greg Clavey from Bemidji with a question about some initials, MPCA.
Yeah, I'd like to know...
He wrote it down, so he's referring to his notes. Unfair. Unfair.
Minnesota industries have profited from polluting our environment, but the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency continues to be under-budgeted, understaffed, and unable to enforce the laws Minnesotans have fought for. What are you doing to turn this around and protect our environment?
And is that to any... particular of the three gentlemen?
Yeah, I'd like to hear what all of them are trying to do to turn this around.
Okay. Thank you.
I go first all the time. You go first.
Well,
Speaker Swigum?
With the lead line, I think the lead line was Minnesota jobs or businesses had profited from polluting our environment. That is a little bit telling of what the rest of the question might be. What we're doing is we're going to make sure that we have a laws that protect our environment, but allow us also to have jobs and to grow. No one wants dirty air. No one wants dirty water. And I'll assure you that through our budget process and through our policy process, headed by Denny Osment, who will be chairing our Environment and Natural Resources Committee, that he will ensure us that whether it be the MPCA or any other law, that air and water will be protected.
Senator Moe?
The administration, I believe, is proposing an increase. It's a limited increase, and then has targeted a number of areas, a couple million dollars from Clean Water Partnership Program, some initiatives aimed at feedlot program management capacity and the like. The key, I think, to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is that, fairly obviously, the pressures continue to grow. Let's take the feedlot issue, for instance. That wasn't even an issue very many years ago, and now it's an issue practically in every agricultural county in the state because of the pressures. And so it's very difficult to balance it out. My philosophy, and I'm certainly not going to try to reflect the sense of the Senate on this, but my philosophy, and I've stolen this phrase from a partnership that the Western governors have put together an attempt to address many of the environmental issues that they face. It's called In Libra, In Balance. And I believe that sums it up for me, that you need a balance between the environment and economic growth. And whenever one begins to cause an impact on the other, then it's out of balance. And I believe that in this state, which is blessed with great natural resources and also has experienced economic growth, and we want it to continue to do that, I think that we can find that balance. But you need a pollution control agency that has to do a job. It might not be very popular, and it might be difficult at times, but there are times when you have to step in and levy fines and be the regulatory agency that it is. Because one of Minnesota's great strengths is its natural beauty And believe me, if we've got to protect that. But it also demands, I might add, drawing people into a new sense of stewardship. I really believe that we have to look at ourselves in this equation and see how we can become better stewards as well. That doesn't necessarily require another government program or more teeth from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, but rather a way that how we look at our stewardship in terms of Minnesota's natural resources.
Governor Ventura?
First of all, I've only been in office less than a month, so what happened at the Pollution Control Agency is not my responsibility up until January 4th, but I'm here now, and the one thing that I do want to focus on is to get them out in the field more and get them out of St. Paul, which means that, you know, more agents out there actually in the field doing their jobs and doing what they're supposed to do out there. But we all have to remember one simple thing that I live by, and I'm very much an environmentalist because that's what got me started in politics in the city of Brooklyn Park, was in the fight over a wetland. But also, I'm a realist, and I realize until someone can tell me different, we're still number one on the food chain.
Okay, Kate Smith.
Since we promised talk about budget, more taxes, back to taxes, you can never get too much taxes, especially on public radio. Here you go.
My name is Stan Donnelly. I'm a citizen in St. Paul. Good evening, gentlemen. Suppose you were my neighbors, and suppose I needed to build a road or to educate my children. I needed money to do that. So suppose I came to you and asked you to give me money to do so. Let's suppose also that I thought my need would require $6. Now, because you had different financial abilities, I didn't ask you all for the same amounts of money. I asked you for, let's say, $3 from Mr. Moe, and $2 from Mr. Ventura, and $1 from Mr. Spigum. You graciously gave me what I requested. But now suppose that my project only costs $3, not the $6 I originally planned, only half. Wouldn't it be fair to give $1.50 back to Mr. Moe, $1 back to Mr. Ventura, and 50 cents back to Mr. Stigum? My question is, without diverging into topics of how I should now spend your monies on different things, please tell me why it is fair to treat you all differently now in giving your money back after I already did when I collected it in the first place.
I'll simply say I stand by my rebate. I stand by my budget. Well, throw your arms up. Hey, you want to come up and, huh? Give you a simple answer? Pardon me?
How is it fair? It's an easy question.
How is it fair? It's fair.
Thank you, Governor.
Simple answer.
But again, fairness is always easily defined by politicians from where we sit or citizens from where they're standing at a certain time. But in regards to Stan's question, if it refers to getting back somewhat reflective of a percentage of what you paid in, that certainly seems to be fair. I understand the need for some type of minimum, some type of caps. I understand that need, both policy and political needs of doing so. But to have government and politicians take dollars not to tax for programs. I can understand taxing for programs. We need programs. We need education. We need health care. We need social services. But to tax to redistribute income, that's wrong. And I, Stan, I just think that's absolutely wrong.
Have an email question here. As a taxpayer, I want to make certain that I live in a state with a vibrant arts community. I believe that the arts contributed significantly to the quality of life in Minnesota, and their state funding has made it possible for many young artists to live and work in the state. Will you continue or expand current funding for the arts? Thanks.
Well, it's easy to talk about expanding all funding, isn't it? But guess what? Somebody has to pay for it. You know, when you take a dollar and give a dollar to someone here, government has to take a dollar from someone else. When I was out campaigning this fall, it was very clear that people wanted to pay less. They wanted less government. They wanted a fiscally conservative budget. And I will just state this, is that my budget that I submitted this year is underneath the average family income for the first time in 8 to 10 years. There's never been a budget in the last 10 years that has grown minus 2.9% per average per year, as opposed to it was over family income the two budgets prior, or many of the budgets prior. And again, it's easy to say we're going to fund everything, we're going to be nice to everyone, but when you do that, then expect to pay more taxes, because somebody has to pay for it.
Senator Mull, any comment?
Again, I don't know what the governor is recommending, but let me just say that in recent years, the Carlson administration had an aggressive push in recent years to increase the appropriation for arts in this state. My colleague, Senator Cohen, is a tireless lobbyist within the Senate on behalf of increased funding for the arts. I'm certain that, I don't know whether or not the administration has proposed any increase. We'll have to wait and see. But I do know that I think we've been, as collectively as your state government, I think we have tried to balance out the needs in the arts community. And let me just say, a significant portion of those resources, again, go to greater Minnesota, where we do not have the access to many of the fine venues that you have here in this metropolitan area. So I think it is a legitimate expenditure, but I must confess, I don't know whether or not there's going to be an increase. My guess is it's probably going to remain somewhat flat over the next couple of years.
Gary, being very directly honest, I would doubt on the House side that you'll see an increase in funding for the arts. Last year, as Roger correctly states, or last biennium, as he states, there was a substantial increase under Governor Carlson's leadership and under his initiative. I would doubt that you would see any increase at all this year, being very honest, because we're going to hold a line on spending, and we're going to give more money back to the folks. Governor, just very, very quickly, just so you, the 2.9% is a calendar year. Biennium to biennium, the increase is 9.8%. And when you include the endowments, it's 12.2%.
Okay, then let's back up and we'll look at the last budget that you approved, that Senator Moe approved, and you approved.
Governor, I voted no. 17.8%.
You vote, well, that's fine. It still passed, though, didn't it?
It was 17.8%.
6.9% personal family income, 5.3%. 99, spending, 8.2%. Personal family income, 4.8%. My budget, spending, 2.8%, personal family income 4.4%, 3.1% personal family income 4.6%.
Again, let me chime in here if I might.
And I believe we had a Republican governor.
I want to point out that the spending percentages that my friends here are talking about include putting money into the budget reserve. It includes buying back the shifts. It includes, yes, paying cash for capital budget, all of which, by the way, now you're proposing to undo. So that did increase
that overall. It was surplus, Roger.
Let me also say that Governor Ventura, you're fortunate to be the beneficiary of about the last 6 years of very good fiscal management, so you have these resources to make these rebate decisions on.
And very good, Roger. Thank you. Let me add that Roger Moe and Steve Swigum are very fortunate, too, that we've had a very vibrant economy for now 8 years straight. So it is not the government that has created this economy. It is the private sector that has created this vibrant economy. And let me add to this that all the reason I took an approach this year of being fiscally prudent and careful is because every top economist will tell you it generally goes in a 4-year cycle. We are now at the end of an 8-year cycle. We're at the end of an 8-year cycle of terrific economic development. If there's a reverse and we do some major knee-jerk tax cuts, 2 years from now we could be facing a deficit.
Good point. Okay, we only have about 4 or 5 minutes left to go. Let's see if we can get at least one more question, if not two. Mike?
We're way in the back of the auditorium, Gary, way in the back here with Mr. Michael Haney.
I bring you greetings, Governor Ventura, from the 63 Indian nations that used to, many of whom used to reside here in the Minnesota area. I represent the Kickapoo, the Meskwaki, the Winnebago, the Sac and Fox, the Potawatomi, and the Cheyenne people from the Midwestern part of this nation. And I congratulate you and Senator Moe and Representative Swigum on this debate tonight. It's good to hear. We have 63 tribal governments where I'm from, and we're all concerned about good roads and job opportunities. And we're also concerned, sir, about a proposed road that goes through an area that we considered a particular sacred and holy to those that used to live here so many thousands of years ago. I would like to ask, sir, is that my governments have asked me to come to speak with you and your government about a dialogue about this road. We're totally for roads. The infrastructure is very important to our economies as well. I was here last month to speak, and we had an agreement with the Justice Department Community Relations Service. And unfortunately, on December 20th, in the morning, we were raided, and that kind of preempted the talk. I would like to ask, sir, could we meet and discuss these things with your new transportation director?
Okay.
Well, I grew up in that neighborhood, and 30 years ago, they came in and tore down the houses. And for 30 years, that project has been on hold. And for 30 years, what talks took place? For 30 years. Now, in the last year and a half, it's time to talk, I guess. And my point is, it's in the court system now. I don't think it has anything truly to do with me. It's being dealt with by the legal system, which is a third portion of our government. We have judicial, legislative, and executive, and it's the judicial system that's handling it now. And I realize that people are claiming it as being sacred land, but I'm a bit confused over the fact that when houses were built on much of this land, why wasn't it sacred then?
Sir, the litigation that you're speaking about is the Judge Albrecht that's holding, what we're in court with, has asked for a dialogue between our governments and the state government of Minnesota. And that's kind of where it's at. So
well, I would imagine you better go see the Attorney General's office, because it's in the legal system and the court system rather than mine.
Okay, just 2 minutes left.
Thank you.
Quick question from the second floor.
Yes, this is Bill from Richfield. Bill?
Yes, gentlemen, thank you for letting me talk to you tonight. I'd like to address in 1996 that the legislature killed the dual-track process of the airport. Thereby, they're going to build a new runway 2 blocks from my home. And the airport is important to the Twin Cities and the whole state of Minnesota. And we really need to know what you're going to do about mitigating any kind of a noise problem that they are going to present to us in the city of Richfield. Our footprint is getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Money for airport noise? More money for airport noise?
I think that falls under the federal and the federal aviation and all that. I know there's quite a bit being spent right now on it, to the best of my knowledge. I'm not an expert on it.
Can I stick one quick question in here before we wrap up? Back to education for just a moment. There's an increase in the basic per pupil formula, as it's called. There's money for
First one in about 10 years.
Smaller class size and the like. Assuming it passes and becomes law, we hear so often that kids don't have textbooks or that the teachers have to buy supplies. Once this is approved, will that be over and done with? We won't hear that complaint anymore, or will we still have that problem of providing basic stuff for the kids in the schools?
If they have that problem, then they should take it to their local school board people, because we will be providing the money. How the locals spend it, if they're not spending it on the kids, then they're going to have trouble with me. because far too long they're spending it on not the children, and it better get to the kids, because I'm demanding results this time. That's why I've put education that high on my budget and a priority.
I just would add that even though the governor's put money on the formula, and he's right, we've not adjusted the formula in recent years, but that doesn't mean we've not put money into education. Even with the amount that the governor's proposing for this upcoming biennium, and I qualify that by saying we don't know what will happen next year in the session, but if we just do what the governor's suggesting, it's going to end up being less than what the two previous biennial budgets from the Carlson administration put into K-12 education.
Okay, we're out of time, unfortunately, at least in terms of our questions. But each of you get a minute here to kind of wrap things up and tell the folks your basic thoughts on the budget, the priorities, and so on. Let's go in reverse order from how we started. Representative Swigum?
Well, thank you, Gary. Thank you to you again and to the audience and to NPR listeners. I genuinely like Senator Moll and Governor Ventura. They're good folks, and there is no reason at all that while differences exist, and certainly there are differences of principle, there are differences of ideas that ought to exist in life, there's certainly no reason why we can't cooperatively work out an arrangement that will make all people in the state of Minnesota feel like we brought a product that is good to them at the end of the legislative session. From the House standpoint, I will guarantee you that we will keep faith with our words. Our words were, we're going to have a permanent tax cut for all working Minnesota families. We're going to improve education, and we're going to empower citizens. We will keep faith with our words.
House Speaker Steve Swigum. Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe.
Thank you very much. I want to thank Minnesota Public Radio and the listeners for having this forum. I think this has been a civil debate, and I look forward to a continuation of this, and hopefully that in the final analysis we can agree in a true tripartisan spirit agreement on the budget and tax policies. As you know, the budget is a framework. It's a blueprint. Excuse me. And I can just simply say that from the Senate's perspective, we like the recommendations that have been made as it relates to the tax rebate and tax cut, putting aside the one-time tobacco resources and emphasizing new kinds of technological advancements to deliver services to citizens and a priority on education. But this plan of action, of course, we need to continue that to make Minnesota more competitive in this global economy. And so issues like workforce initiatives, high standards for education, affordable housing, these are all issues that will also be on the agenda as we attempt to be economically competitive in the 21st century. So I certainly look forward to working with the Ventura administration and with the Speaker and his caucus as we work to make Minnesota a better place to live and work. Thank you.
Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe. Governor Jesse Ventura.
Thank you, and thank you to Steve and Roger. It was very enjoyable tonight. Again, I'm very proud of the budget we submitted. It's got a $1.087 billion settle-up tax rebate that'll go out immediately. My plan cuts income taxes $1.6 billion over 4 years and hits every Minnesotan because we're expanding that lower bracket so it will be larger. We also eliminate the marriage penalty. We reduce the first bracket tax rate to 5.75%, which hits every Minnesotan because you pay that first bracket before you gradually work your way up to the top, depending upon how much money that you make. We plan to cut motor vehicle registration tax so that people won't pay over $75 to register their motor vehicles. We have a plan that benefits working families. If you make $35,000, your total savings will be $680, $75,000, $1,583, and so on. And our plan sets the stage for long-term tax reforms in the future. I'm very proud of it and look forward to both the House and the Senate and getting the job done. Thank you.
Governor Jesse Ventura, thanks so much, gentlemen. Really appreciate your coming by this evening. Forum Governor Jesse Ventura, DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe, and Republican House Speaker Steve Swigum joining us this evening for our live broadcast from the Fitzgerald Theater in downtown St. Paul. We'd also like to thank all of you
who showed up at the theater this evening. Kind of a crappy night out there, but it was sure nice of you to come out. I'd like to thank all of you who've been with us on the radio and all of you who've been following us online. Tonight's forum was made possible with the financial assistance of the Public Affairs Group of Tunheim Santrizos Company, a national communications management firm based in the Twin Cities. Now, there are lots of people who worked on this evening's program. Our producer for these Fitzgerald forums is Sarah Meyer, executive producer Melanie Summer, news director is Bill Buesenberg. Our radio engineer this evening, Alan Strickland, technical assistants here at the Fitzgerald from Tom Campbell, Alan Freckman, Brian Sanderson, Katie Berger, and Dan Zimmerman. Bob Collins and Annie Feit have been handling our email questions, our Oprahs this evening, Mike Mulcahy, John Raby, Kate Smith, and Melanie Summer, Will Hadland, Kelly Shasky, Tony Bowl, Jen Hathaway of our Public Affairs Department handled all the arrangements for tonight's forum. They set it up. And again, thanks to all of you for making it a success. I'm Gary Eichten. Good evening from the Fitzgerald Theater in downtown St. Paul.